At the National Ethanol Conference, I am speaking with Dave Vandergrund with ICM. Dave, tell me a little bit about your history with RFA and ICM's support of the ethanol industry.
Well, I guess we've been in the ethanol industry, I've been in the ethanol industry for over 30 years. And as part of High Plains, a company I worked for from 1985 to 1995, we were members of RFA and a number of different ethanol groups. Since 1995, when we started ICM, we have been part of RFA, recognizing that RFA was the Washington D.C. advocate for ethanol, and RFA has done a very, very good job of working that end.
Well, it seems like quite a lot has been accomplished on the legislative level through RFA's efforts over the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's such a challenging environment in Washington, especially these last couple of years. You know, if you go just back, 10 or 15 years, we had Dole, we had Daschle, we had bipartisan support on both sides of the aisle, and really, they got it. They understood the value of producing something at home. You know, basically, wealth comes from the ground, and that could be agriculture, it could be forestry, it could be oil, but it's domestic. It's here, and when you look at the charts just over the last few years, we have significantly reduced our import of oil, especially from the countries that don't particularly see the world the way we see it. And so we're seeing the ethanol increase. We're seeing domestic production of oil increase. We're seeing stabilization from our friends to the north, Canada, and friends to the south, Mexico. But we are seeing a significant drop in oil from foreign countries who will use the revenue from that oil for purposes that aren't in line with where we're trying to go. So from that standpoint, I'm very happy with what the industry has been able to do, and I'm extremely enthused about where we're headed and also extremely frustrated about where we're headed at the same time. What is really, I think, fundamentally flawed in all of what we're trying to do here is that we're looking just to go from 10% ethanol to 15% ethanol with a clean, non-toxic product. And the petroleum industry can go anywhere from 10 to 30 and sometimes 40% aromatic additions to their gasoline at any time they choose. Ethanol would reduce tailpipe emissions by over 50% at even just a 30% inclusion rate. The consumer doesn't know that, and that is such a well-kept secret by the petroleum industry. And we're here in a slugfest over 5% ethanol. Bluntly said, this is all about control. This isn't about what's best for America. It's about who can control what.
I never even heard of aromatics. Explain a little bit about what those are, the E30 advantage of having 30% ethanol in gasoline to replace some of the things that are in it right now.
To explain E30, I'll go to a little bit of a fun history lesson. And, back in 1910, Henry Ford designed a car that would run on ethanol or gasoline, depending upon where the individual was at. Actually, the first FFE was a Model T, and that wasn't something that sat well with Rockefeller. He wanted everything to be gasoline, but at that time, there was no octane additive to put into the gas, so gas really wasn't very good. It would have been about an 82 to 84 octane straight-run gasoline, and cars would ping and knock, and they didn't have the sophistication of today. Taking that fuel that they made then, that they would have been adding 20 or 30% ethanol with it, they would have had a clean-burning, safe fuel, and both parties would have won. You know, they were able to get rid of ethanol through Prohibition, and then they miraculously identified lead, and we ended up with a gas called ethyl, and that particular fuel didn't knock, and it gave the auto industry the octane that they needed. And that was real good until the U.S., until the consumer, I guess you'd say, you know, understood what was in it and the toxicity of that fuel, and they said, take it out. So then, you know, you go back to 1970, the EPA was formed with the express purpose of getting the lead out of gas. They accomplished that over about a 16-year period. But they again, you're back to they had to have something to replace it with. So they replaced it by doing reforming at the refineries and producing more aromatics. And when you think of aromatics, this is not perfume we're talking about. But there's about 25% aromatics in gas today. About 10% of it comes with the gas when you do your first run distillation, and then they've got some sophisticated reforming and severe reforming, and you can get more aromatics, which gives them the octane they need for the gasoline. Ethanol can replace aromatics on a one-to-one and give them actually more octane than they had from the aromatics, but the petroleum guys don't make it. So what their solution was then is, okay, if lead's coming out, we've got to put aromatics in. Okay, so they put the aromatics in. Well, the next move of the Clean Air Act of 1990 was, okay, we need to get the oxygen level up in the gasoline so that they can burn, again, try and burn cleaner, as the EPA was charged to do. The next thing they came up with was MTBE. They produced MTBE as an oxygenate, and they added 15% MTBE to be equal to the oxygen level of just 7% ethanol. The point was, they made it. It was their stuff, and it was better for them than fuel ethanol was. And it took about 6 or 7 years to identify just how toxic this product was. And they were able to go from 0 to 15% to 10 to 5 to whatever they wanted to, without any resistance from the government or the environmental. And I find that just bizarre that here we are fighting over E10 to E15 with a clean-burning fuel that the car can accept, but they can create so much noise that it is just extremely difficult for us to fight that. This is one industry that meets opportunities for people almost in whatever walk of life they are, or whatever they're passionate about. If they are passionate about the environment, ethanol burns significantly cleaner. If you're about the economy, when you spend a dollar for a gallon of gas and you put it in your car, the gas is gone. Now, if that gas was made from all imported oil, so's the money. Now, if that gas was made from domestic renewable fuels, you still have the money. And, if you're about food security, we're utilizing more grain in this country, and we are giving a backstop to the corn farmer so that we're not sitting there with him losing money. Once they have an opportunity to take this excess grain and make food and fuel out of it, rather than only being able to market it to the livestock industry and or the export industry, once they did that, we are now seeing agricultural values come up to where they should have been 20 years ago.
Dave Vandergrind with ICM, the National Ethanol Conference in Orlando. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.